Okay, Ayin Hey Omer Aleph for the last word on Ayin Dalet Omer Beis. Remember, there's a three-way machlokas in the Mishnah on Ayin Dalet about a Shomeret Yavam. Shomeret Yavam. And it's just so crazy that this case that I've been telling you about over the past few weeks, she's having the chalitza today. And that this whole experience, you know, who gets to ever interact with there are, if you go, I actually sent her one that she should see what it is, and that she should send to her brother-in-law to see what it is beforehand. But if you Google it, you can find they have, I mean, they're these they're obviously these custom made, it looks like a Roman sandal. Right, so, I mean, I don't know exactly how they do it, but...
I don't understand, you know, what's from Sheila Raphael, that is in the Abed Din in Yerushalayim. And in some case like this, and also with abroad, there was some, I guess, people like in the Ukraine, that the brother-in-law is willing to do it. This is after years of that. He says, but yeah, I get to tomorrow, when it's in, I don't know, Belgium. He got his suitcase while there, and his shoe was in on the plane, and he went.
But it is these leather, it looks like a tefillin strap with this like leather thong that wraps up, you know, up around the calf. And that you can, I mean, that there's pictures of in Encyclopedia Judaica online, as I'm sure. And there was a chalitza that was performed in YU before I got there, but while I was in YU, people were still talking about it. That there was this old, as I recall the story, it was like this old couple who I think they were both Holocaust survivors. And it was one of these things, you know, like they, you know, discovered each other, the widow and the brother-in-law. And I don't think that they were, you know, I think they were quite old at the time of the story, which takes place in the mid-80s. Anyway, they came to YU, they were from Mexico City or something like that, and they came to YU because Rav Melech Schechter, Zichrono Lebracha, Rabbi Herschel Schechter's father, was a Masader Chalitza. You know, he knew how to execute the ceremony, and there aren't too many people that do know how to do that. And so they came to New York, and they, I don't know, maybe they must have spoken Yiddish? I don't know, because they were Spanish speakers, because they had spent, you know, the previous 40 years in Mexico. I don't remember the details, but they were quite old, and I think they were hard of hearing or something. And part of it is that she has to say the psukim, you know, like the way the Torah describes it, like a dialogue. So they have to be recited, you know, rather precisely, and she had trouble reciting it, and it was this, you know, kind of ongoing take one, take two, take three kind of thing. They talk about the story, but beyond that, but if you look online, you can see videos of chalitzot. The case of chalitza that was here in town, you know, there's a woman in town who had chalitza a number of years ago, and you know, they did the Bez Din in Yerushalayim, and they asked, you know, would it be okay if we, not open to the public, but if, you know, since it's such a rare thing, Talmidei Chachamim and yeshiva students and whatnot want to see it. So she agreed. People came, and but you know how yeshiva guys can be. Like, the whole thing just becomes like an abstraction. And they're like, you know, pilpling and fumfering and whatever. Like, at a certain point, like, she like stopped the proceeding, and she said, you know, you're all looking at this like it's some kind of like abstract, you know, Talmudic drama come to life. But it's also very human drama. Right? We're here because my husband died and we didn't have children, and that should not go unmentioned in these proceedings. And it like threw a bucket of cold water on on the excitement of
I don't know why it's so incredibly uncommon. We have a cousin who was killed in a traffic accident about less than a year after he got married. He was without and didn't have children.
Okay.
And he has brothers.
So you know one case.
Yeah, but it doesn't seem that that would be so.
Do you know anybody?
No. And I have a pretty big family tree.
How many times have you been to a pigeon event in your life? What?
Up until a few years ago, I've been at two.
Two.
And then my brother's kids started having children. Another five or six, you know.
Okay. So, but, you know, that's not, but you can't compare it to, like, the amount of brisin you've been to. Bar mitzvahs.
But there's a difference between, plenty of people have been to an event, but there's a difference between something that happens frequently, but people just,
It doesn't happen that frequently. First of all, Baruch Hashem, there aren't many people that die in the period between their wedding and the birth of a child.
No, I didn't say frequently, but so infrequently.
How many, forget about Fleitzer, how many people do you know, like, in that, even if it wasn't exactly the circumstance, it's pretty rare.
It's pretty rare. And you have to have a brother. And you have to be within the community of people that are interested in doing mitzvot. Here in Eretz Yisrael, it's a little more, you know, like if a widow goes to get remarried, you know, so the Beis Din's not going to let her get remarried. If she wants to get married, Kedas Moshe of Yisrael in the state of Israel.
In the past, I don't know how many years, about the Piguim, and so you don't hear about a lot of, like, cases. Imagine in the news, like, oh, you know, there was a case like this. You don't hear about that very often. I can't think of a case where I've heard of
Or certainly soldiers who would die.
I'm sure the Rabbanut HaTzvahi. As a matter of fact, I remember when I, on my Yom Gius, which was a very long day, you know, I spent one day in the army.
Me too. One.
And it was a very long day. I mean, I appreciate the fact there are people that do more than one day's of service, but and that day was basically, you know, that you've been in the army, so you remember it. That day is basically documenting 101 ways to identify your body parts if, God forbid, they need to ever be identified. They x-ray your skull, and they photograph your teeth and take your dental records, and they fingerprint your, you know, every finger and your footprints and your and they take different biometric measures. And I don't recall if they took DNA. This was before. Now I'm sure they take DNA samples. And in the, when you sit there and they, like, interview you and get all the details, one of the things I want to know is, you know, who are your living brothers and where are they and how do we reach them? And, you know, and I had no living brothers, so I have no brothers, so that was it. You know, and I understood why they were asking me that question. I presume that most people going through that process don't understand the significance of that. You know, it's one of 1,000 questions they ask you. But I understood why. They didn't ask me about my sisters.
You were married?
I was married with children, but I presume it's just there on the form. And Rachmanis, if somebody, this is one of the sugis in the Gemara. If there's a woman has a husband and a son, and both of them are killed in an accident, if the son predeceases the father, she needs chalitza.
Yeah.
Yeah? Because he didn't leave behind Zera Shel Kayama. If the father predeceases the son, the existence of the son, even momentarily after the death of the father, exempts her from chalitza. But if the son dies first, I don't know, a father and a son are in a traffic accident. The son is killed on the spot. The father dies later in the hospital. She would need chalitza if he was the only child.
Your case is if a soldier dies, doesn't
have children. Yeah, so a pregnancy does not poter her. She could have.
The principal.
I mean, yeah.
Well, because normally you'd have,
nobody have a clan. Nobody have a chashash.
Right.
Here, there's no chashash because I mean, I don't know if they're like shkafically. It's supposed to be like your late husband's son.
Right. So, anyway, let's look at the Gemara. All right, so we're going to finish the sugya today, and it completely coincides the however many weeks we've been doing the sugya of Yibum completely coincides with my involvement in that one case. So the Mishnah on Ayin Dalet had talked about this case of the Shomeret Yavam for the purposes of Nedarim. It's a three-way machlokas. Rabbi Eliezer said, "Bein le'echad, bein le'shnayim, yafir." Right, the brothers or any one of them can be made for her Nedarim. Rabbi Yoshua said, "La'echad yafir velo le'shnayim," because then it's clear who has the rights. There's no. And Rabbi Akiva says that the Yavam can never have rights over the Nedarim. Rabbi Eliezer is difficult to understand, and Rav Ami explains that Rabbi Eliezer means in which case? Yafe, you got it, it's on the tip of your tongue. Ma'amar. When one of the brothers did Ma'amar, which is the Dirabonon equivalent of Erusin in the case of Yibum, so that brother acquires rights over the Nedarim, right? So the Gemara, our Gemara now asks on Ayin Hey. Well, the last word on Ayin Dalet, my Tanya Kavas is Rabbi Ami. In what way? In what way is that Brisa? Remember, we had a Brisa. The Gemara brought a Brisa, which is very parallel to the Mishnah, but not exactly.
Right? You had the difference of Shabbat Lushuto or like Kanal.
That's one of the differences. So in that Brisa, which was brought to support the position of Rav Ami, that Rabbi Eliezer is talking only in a case when there was Ma'amar. How does that Brisa show it? Because that Brisa does not actually state explicitly that it was a case of Ma'amar. It's all through an inference. Right? If the Brisa would have... That would be like a very neat solution. Rav Ami says... the apparently problematic position of Rabbi Eliezer is in a case of Ma'amar, so even though there are multiple brothers, one of them has acquired special rights, and then we can understand it. And then in that case, Rabbi Eliezer is not all that much different than Rabbi Yoshua. Right? And then Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua would be on one side.
Well, it's not even that different than Rabbi Akiva, because he's putting in a whole different...
So Rabbi Akiva doesn't accept the idea at all.
But even when there would be Ma'amar, we know that?
He says, Le'olam, never. The Yavam is never... Until they're fully married. What's the lashon of Rabbi Akiva? Rabbi Akiva lo. Rabbi Akiva omer lo leechad v'lo leshnayim. And earlier he had said not until until you're fully married.
Right.
Says that the relationship between Yavam and Yavamah.
Mama would make a difference because he says an Arus.
Right.
The reason why if Mama makes him like an Arus, there's still a difference.
So Rabbi Ami says Rabbi Eliezer is after Ma'amar. Ha, Rav Ami, how do you know that? So Rav Ami could pull out a brisa that says, "Om Rabbi Eliezer, Achrei Ma'amar, Keshasa la Ma'amar." That would be very elegant. Unfortunately, there ain't no such brisa. So he brings this brisa. This brisa doesn't say that. So it's a diuk in the brisa. What's the diuk in the brisa? Tani Kavasa Rabbi Ami. The Ketani Bain Sha'asaba Ma'amar Bain Shaloa Saba Ma'amar. Rabbi Akiva says no. The Arus the Yavam never has rights over the Nedarim, whether he did Ma'amar or not. Whoa, wait a second, Rabbi Akiva. Well, who said anything about Ma'amar? So
is
what?
This a quote from the Braita?
No, this is, yeah, that's a quote from Braita.
So this is the deal that Rav Ami is making.
So if Rabbi Akiva says Bein Shasabav, so what is Rabbi Akiva responding to?
Responding to
the implication, the reading between the lines of Rabbi Eliezer. The Rabbi Elias's position is Lachar Ma'amar, and we know that because Rabbi Akiva is responding that even if he does Ma'enochinami, even if he does Ma'amar, he has no rights. So that's how we know that Rav Ami is talking about, that's Rav Ami's source, that Rabbi Eliezer is Lachar Ma'amar.
How do we know the Lashon of Rav Ami Dikthani Ben Shasaba Ma'amar Oshlosa Ma'amar? This is talking about Rabbi Akiva?
No, that's in the Braita.
That's in the Braita. It's a quote. It's a quote from Rabbi Akiva. The Gemara doesn't tell you Omar Rabbi Akiva, but if you know what the quote is, you know this is a quote of Rabbi Akiva. So Inami, alternatively, Miresha. There's another way we can learn it out from the Braita. Dikatani Mishenichnasa Lirshuto Nigmaralo.
I think that's what I mentioned last week.
What?
I think I mentioned this last week, but I thought that it meant more of a sense of that this was the difference between the Braita and the Mishnah. And to me, that sounds more like a silly unit, like everything. But I guess
so. Mishnechas the Rishuto Nigmaralo the Idlo Kaddish my Nigmaralo Tif Shok Minekashasaba Mamar. So if it's not Kedusha, what is it? So it's got to be Ma'amar. V'afal piken. So then the Gemara asks, my the Braisa had ended. The Braisa had ended. The Sefer the Braisa says, Ukishar dvarim kein nedarim. Just as in everything else, there's no difference, there's no distinction with the Nadarim.
So according to Rabbi Akiva.
So what does that mean? What does this phrase mean? In what way? What are the other ways that the Yavam has, that there's no distinction? As Rabbi Akiva says, lo mishane. Yibum chalitza, that's fine. It's got nothing to do with nedar. Right. As Rabbi Akiva rejects this whole admixing of nedarim and yibum chalitza. You want to do yibum? You do yibum. After yibum, what is she? She's your wife. And then you have rights over her nedarim. But you do chalitza, you do ma'amar, which is bechlal a rabbinic invention. What's the havamina that the rabbinic invention of ma'amar would give you rights over diraisa, right? But when he said, what does it mean kashar dvarim? What are the other things? Kashar dvarim kein nedarim dekatani omar rava. Hochi katani, I ata mode, she'ein chayvim skila kina'ara hamiruasa. Don't you agree that a yivama whose mezana is not chayvet skila? A na'ara hamiruasa. After kiddushin, if she goes and has relations with another man, she's both of them, the man and the woman, are chayev skila. A yivama, her husband dies. The zika is created with the brother-in-law.
But she wouldn't be chayev skila.
Right? She cannot get married to anyone else. But if she's mezane, they're chayev malchus. But they're not chayev skila. So what do you see from that? That it's not exactly like Kiddushin, even with the rabbinic device of Ma'amar. Omar Ravashi, Masnis and Dami Daika. You can learn that out. You can infer this also from the Mishnah. Ein Yivamag Murali Isha, Kashem Sharusag Murali Isha. that the relationship of the Yavama and her Yavam is not exactly marriage. It's something else. It has a different name. It has a different category. It has a different status.
What?
Look at the halacha.
How does this, well, there's no answer from Rabbi Kiva, so
he just
ends like that?
Well, it's the answer from Rabbi Kiva is, it sounds like what? Like Rabbi Kiva's right.
No, he's not right. He said there's no difference between the Dvarim and everything else.
No.
Gishar Dvarim, Ken Nidarim.
Gishar Dvarim, Ken Nidarim. Nidarim, he has no rights. And just like other things, what are the other things in which they're not exactly married?
For example,
in the case of Mizanah. Right? In other words, the Gemara wants to know, when the Braisa ends with this kind of enigmatic Kishar Dvarim, the Yibum relationship, the relationship between a Shomeret Yavam and her Yavama, the Shomeret Yavam and the Yavam, is not exactly marriage. For which purposes? Here's an example. So look at the Rambam. This is Yibum v'chalitza perek bet halacha yud ches. Hayivama kodem shiavo aleha yivama yavma. That's with the mapik hey. Am I right? Yes. O kodem shiachlotzla harehi asura lina silizar. She cannot marry anyone else. However, what did we say last week? You're still very happily married to your lovely wife. It was the example we used last week. Everything, Baruch Hashem, a week later, things are still good. Right? You mekadesh your wife. Before the wedding, somebody else comes along and gives her a ring and says, Hariyat mekudeshet li. What just happened?
Nothing.
Klum. Nothing. Why?
Because she's no longer someone who can possibly...
Because she's not somebody that can be Mekabelet Kiddushin. She's not a Rivakak. Right? Without getting into the politics of, you know, of the current politics of marriage and what's recognized as marriage today, we understand that in Halacha there's a thing, a notion of a Chalot Kiddushin, of a Chalot for all types of purposes. Right? Just like we had, like, you take a raw baked potato and you stick it into the fire on Shabbos, and it reaches a certain amount of being cooked, either a third or a half, you're chayiv, you mechal Shabbos, you chayiv misa, because you did the malach of bishul. Right? You take a baked potato that had already been fully cooked, and you stick it back in the fire, minatora, you didn't violate anything. Because of
Ein
Bishul Achar Bishul. Dirabonan it's aser. Right? But something which is fully cooked, or even mostly cooked, you can't... The iser of Bishul is not chal on that object again. You take, you're not allowed to grind things up on Shabbos because of the Malach of Tchina. You take, coffee beans and your
sesame seeds.
You grind up into Tchina, right? So Malach of Mediraisa. Right? You take a matzah and you put it into the grinder and grind it up into matzah meal. Ein Tchina achar Tchina. Dirabon on its aser. But Minator, you can't violate this Isser cannot attach itself to this. It's the same thing. The same thing with the mitzvahs. You can't be a brother gives Kesef Kedushin to his sister. She's not Mekudeshet.
What?
It just doesn't work. You can't be Mekadesh Nesish Eishesish. That's not true about Yivama. It's usher for her to marry anyone else until she has Yibum or Chalitza. Asura l'nasele zar, shnei emar lo tiye eshet hamet hachutza l'ish zar. Right? Ve'im nis'et la'acher, uva'ala, If, however, she does go and gets married and has relations, Loke, hu vehi, they both get Malkus. Umotzia beget. And he has to divorce her with a get. Which means, what does it sound like?
That they are married.
That they are married. It was also for her to marry him. A Kohen can't marry a Grusha. But if a Kohen gives Kesef Kedushin to a Grusha,
they're married.
They're married. Right. There are certain Isurim, people that are not allowed to get married to each other, but B'dieved, if they get married, right, they're married. Right. And it's also for them to live together. But then the other types of people, it's also for you to marry them. It's also for you to have relations with them. But if you try to be Mekadesh, if a brother tries to be Mekadesh, a sister, nothing happened.
When it says, when the halacha says Motzia Beget, it's, he, obviously, he would need a get, that we understand. Does it also mean he's required to right now, that Beit Din has to, can force him to give a get?
Presumably, yeah.
But in the case of, I mean, it's not, it does happen that a Kohen marries a Grusha.
Yeah, it happens all the time.
Right. And we don't hear of any stories of a Beit Din.
I mean, the Batei Din don't have, you know, we don't live in a time where Batei Din have that kind of authority.
Right, and, but, and the children are perfectly kosher. It's not nice, but they're kosher.
The children are halalim, mm-hmm, but they're not, they're not mamzerim.
They can't make wine.
Right. They're not mamzerim.
Right.
So. There were like two, I was thinking of two classic stories that I read. One where Moshe Feinstein, one about the Rav and the Moshe Feinstein band. There's got two cases where like a Kohen Baal Tshuva and his wife was Shar or something like that, Shar or Gior, I don't remember the story. Basically, he wasn't allowed to marry her.
Oh.
And Moshe Feinstein said he basically like didn't believe that he was a Kohen. That's when it's anyway.
Yeah, so there is.
The Rav had a similar case, and I think with Rav Kevin his book, he was like, sorry, right.
Look, it may depend upon the case. It may depend. Look, this,
but it
this
makes
idea that,
their,
that we
makes
can
sense in terms of their approach as well. I think in terms of like when being posek and the rabbi being more
right,
of a
right. But there probably are facts on the, you know, I don't think that Rav Moshe would be prepared to do this for every single
right
case across the board. But if there's mi kamonu, we know al psarenu that not every Kohen's a Kohen, not every Levi's a Levi, not every Israel's Israel. We play musical chairs. And listeners to these recordings by now should know this story because we repeat it every 3 or 4 weeks. But you know, so you have to have an ilah. I mean, if Moshe wouldn't have done it, you know, if this kid, you know, if his last name was Cohen, and his father Duchend, and on his grandfather's kever there was the live long and prosper, and going back, you know, at Sof Kol Adorot. It's hard to say that, we have reason to believe he's not a Kohen. But if any of us, you search a little bit, you know, particularly in a case of a Baal Tshuva, you know, so it's easier to.
My kids found a Chaladeko in the museum in Lodz.
Found
a Chaladeko, a Chaladeko in the museum in Lodz. The name Danziger is a common name. Danziger is a very uncommon name. And
but you presume it's from Danziger.
No.
Oh.
We presume actually that it isn't.
Uh-huh.
So they saw the name Dansker spelled, and it was spelled in Yiddish, but more or less the way I would spell it, Hakohen.
Oh.
But I don't presume I'm Hakohen. My grandfather knew he wasn't Hakohen.
Right. So the Rambam goes on, Motziah beget, Vafilu hayala kame banim. While she was married to this fellow, she had children. Think of a different case. Not here, she did something wrong. Survive after the war. She survives the war. Her husband was killed. They have, you know, she's not Naguna, right? There's eyewitness testimony. The husband was killed. You know, the brothers were killed. There's no one left. She remarries. Then it turns out that one of his brothers survived. But in the meantime, she'd been remarried. She had children. She had whatever. Right, so this would be a sticky wicket to pass any way out of, because at least according to the Rambam, she'd have to divorce her husband, even if she has children with him. Right?
Is chalitza you know, you can't marry a divorcee again. Like, if you divorce and you marry someone else and then you divorce them, so you can't marry again. But can, does Chalitza Chazan Efev, which in that case you're describing, would she be able to do a Chalitza with the Lemurian brother and then go back to marry her?
So. I don't think so.
Is it because of you, as if she was married in between?
I'm not sure, but I don't think so. Then Motzia Beget Vafilu Hayula Kama Banim Vinesra Alav. She becomes usher to this man, and it's under the general principle that that relationship that she had was a relationship of znut. And generally speaking, you can't go back to the one you were mazana with. Val Yavma. Meaning to third party, fourth parties.
So this, well, you're saying the reason was because of the issue of znut, not like what I'm saying, because of the marriage between the nafka mina to that could be
of machzir grusha, you mean?
Well, yeah, well, right. So the nafka mina would be, what if she marries someone else? When she's, instead of doing, waiting for the imam, and then and he dies, the brother, the remaining brother dies. If it's, and there's no one left to do chalitza, so if they'll say, well, that could be a thing.
Probably not. In other words,
she could stay married.
She marries someone else, right? Take the case that I described. Right. A tragic case, right? She thinks that her husband and all of his brothers are dead. And the Beis Din allows her to get married. It's half of a plot already of an Agnon story. But, so she gets married, and then the brother comes out of the woods. Right? So, my goodness, the whole thing's a tragedy. And he's so shocked by the tragedy, the Beis Din says, oh, you know, you came back, you have to do a chalitza with the widow, but she's married, we're going to have to force her to get divorced. And he is such a tragedy, he has a heart attack and drops dead. That relationship that she had with that man was still a relationship, technically.
And in that case, she would have to divorce him even if there was no more.
I think that they would be forced to be divorced, unless somebody came up with a creative solution. But on the letter of the law, it seems like she'd have to divorce that man, even though there's now no longer anybody to do chalitza for her. I would think so.
It's not because, unless you said it was because of Machzir Grusha.
I don't think it's because of Machzir Grusha. I think because when there's a relationship, there's no sort of forcing to get divorced, and that's it, you can't go back. Right? So the Magad Mishnah here says, Hayavma kodem shiavo, ze mifurash beharbe mekomot, shayavma lazar, he, mechayave lavin, sheish ben malka. If a woman, if a Shomeret Yavam, needs to, is awaiting Yibam or Chalitza, she's also to other men, but she's not Chayev Skila, she's Chayev Malkus. Umashkitav Rabbeinu Shemotzia Baget Mifurash Begemara. Umashkitav Vafilu Hayu Lakama Banim. Hu Machloket Bein Hagaonim. This point, that even if she has children with the man she mistakenly married, that's a machlokas. In this case of the Yibum. In a different case, a case of an aguna. This is the Agnon story, Vayakov Lemishor. The husband is presumed to be dead. They're mater, the widow, to get remarried. She has children. And then the Gemara calls Ba Harug Biraglav, dead man walking. Right? The man who is presumed to be dead shows up, turns up. Right? That's a different case. In that case, the halacha is clear. But in this case, in the case of the Yibum, it's another example how you see that the relationship is not exactly the same. So in this case of the Yibum, so this is a machlokas.
So it's machlokas in your case of the.
So the Rambam paskins that she has to get divorced even if she has children. If she doesn't have children, so everyone agrees they have to get divorced. But if she has children, in this case, so the Magid Mishnah points out this is actually a machlokas goyim.
Which was your case that you gave?
My case was according to the Rambam paints it.
No, I understand. Your psak was according to the Rambam, but you presented the same case of the woman after the Shoah, she gets married, she has kids, and that's this case.
That's the case according to the Rambam.
But that's what the Magid Mishnah is.
No, the Magid Mishnah is now saying, but this, whether after, if she has children and the brother-in-law shows up, this is a machlokas amongst the Gaonim. Shigesh Ben Gaonim, Shigesh Misha Haya Sover Sheim Niset Li Yisrael, V'yesh La Banim Mimenu, Choletz La Hayavam, V'yoshevet Tachat Ba'ala. And she can stay, he still should do chalitza. The surviving brother shows up, comes out of the woods, you do chalitza, but she can remain with her husband, but husband here in air quotes, right? But he is her husband. The kiddushin were tofsin.
So in other words, it wasn't even a znut by mistake.
No, it may have been. But kidei shelo lahotzi laz al baneha, v'halu v'hilchot she'ein hadavar kein. Ela afilu hayu la kama banim.
That's not like a halachot gdolot?
What? Yeah. So in other words, it's about, so the there was a sheet in the Gaonim that in this case, in order to preserve the family and in order to protect in all cases the children not mamzerim, and in order to protect the good name of these children, so we allow them to stay together, because it's not exactly a regular case of znus.
Right.
It's not exactly like an Eishes Ish was mazana. Right? However, the Bahag and the Rambam following him are machmir, but there is a position that would be lenient. I don't know, I presume that it is known. I personally don't know of actual cases like this. I presume after the war there were such cases.
Maybe some people look for the, you know.
What?
There might have been, you know, those that want to rely on the Magid Mishnah for the exact reason that it's,
you know. No, not the Magid Mishnah, the other sheet in the Gaon. The Magid Mishnah is not Paskin, he's just reporting the facts.
But Allah authority in today's time wouldn't be able to rely on earlier.
I don't know. I mean, it would be hard to paskin against the Rambam in the absence of something besides a rejected opinion in the Gaonim. I don't know. I presume if there were an actual case, and we could look it up, but I presume if there were an actual case like this, and I presume in history there has been an actual case like this, you know, whether or not the Gedolei Poskim would be able to pull a rabbit out of that and save the day.
There seemed to be a few documents, I don't know, documented cases where after the Shoah, when the married and the husband showed up. But there are stories all the time.
There were many more cases of Agunot.
There's that book, no?
Those were during the war. Those were, that was Rav. What was his name?
Oshri.
Yeah. In English, it's called like "Responses from the Holocaust" or something. But those were Shilas that he was asked in the camps. But I don't. Maybe he has. Maybe. But I don't know. But I presume that I'm sure we can look it up.
We know that even today, siblings. We know that even today, siblings were presumed dead.
Yes.
So that could have happened.
Yeah. Yeah. So we will try to find the case. Then, in just the general halacha of the three-way machlokas in the Mishnah. So the Rambam paskins. This is in Hilchos Nedarim. Shomeret Yavam, afilu asaba Yavma ma'amar, vafilu Yavam echad li Yavma achat, eino mefer nedre Yavamto ad shiavo aleha, like Rabbi Akiva. Not like Rabbi Eliezer, and not like Rabbi Yehoshua, and not like Rabbi Eliezer Aliba the Ravami, and not like Rabbi Yehoshua, Ella like Rabbi Akiva. Why? Because not everything that looks the same is exactly the same. And each category has its own set of rules. The Radbaz says, Shomeret Yavam, Ze mevur mimashika tova shemamar biyavma have midivrei sofrim. The whole Havamina, Ravami's, we'd have to understand Ravami's Havamina. Ravami's Havamina, not Havamina, Ravami's position about Rabbi Eliezer has to mean that Rabbi Eliezer holds Enachinami. Really, any of the brothers could be Mayfair.
Right?
And but Ma'amar means that one person has stepped up and therefore we assign the rights to him to the exclusion of the others. But what would happen b'di'evit? I'm just thinking out loud here. Let's say the halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer according to Rav Ami. You got Reuven, rest in peace, shuffled off the mortal coil. So you got Shimon, Levi, and Yehuda that are left. Shimon does Ma'amar. She makes an Eder, and Levi is Mefer. B'di'evit. He shouldn't do it. It should be the guy that did Ma'amar.
Why would it have any strength? Because it's Hafara.
No. Why would it not have any strength?
Because if it has to be, you know, the Hafara has to be on the right level also, because if that's how it works. So you're right, Levi has the right to do it.
L'chadchile shouldn't do it. Because derabonan, we've assigned the rights to the person that did Ma'amar. But Minatora, it has to be that Rabbi Eliezer holds that any of the brothers could do it.
Right.
Because it can't be, unless you want to say that it's one. This is one of the cases where, Oki Rabbanon Devar Minatora.
Well, no, there's a way around it. You could say, because Rabbi Eliezer in the previous Mishnah said that it was kashur to financial obligation. So if you want to say that financial obligation to Malmar brings financial obligation,
right.
And you could say that. That could be.
You'd have to say that, but it's not clear that it does.
Well, it is very. No, you have to say. We know that Rabbi Eliezer says that. Right. We don't know what Rabbi Eliezer really would say about. We don't know what Rabbi Eliezer would say about me because he didn't say
no,
it.
No, but that's after 12 months.
No, but the idea is that we know that Rabbi Eliezer has an idea of financial responsibility being able to have it apply even before Nisuch.
Right.
So we don't know what Rabbi Eliezer would say in response to Rami. We're assuming Rami is saying,
right.
But that could be a scenario where it wouldn't have to be okay or divinatory. It could be that the fact that once you do Ma'amar, you are accepting upon yourself a level of financial responsibility, and that's what allows you to do it.
But you have to say that. You don't say that.
Well, nobody. You just say, all you have to say is, look at the position.
Okay,
I told you.
Yeah, okay.
But in your hypothetical case, in which Levi shouldn't have been there, but he was, so it still counts, then Mama has no relevance whatsoever. So
it does, only Dirabonon. Dirabonon has relevance for saying, because it's difficult to say that multiple people have these rights.
I understand that, but if we basically, you've basically just given an example, and you've said that even though, that he shouldn't, he did, so it still works, then Ma'amar, even on a rabbinic level, really added nothing. In other words, Rav Ami's
on a rabbinic level, it did, because it limits the rights to one person.
No, but what if it limits the rights to one person? The second and the third brother, you just said, could be made.
L'chadchila, they shouldn't do it.
But if it's still b'di'avad, it has strength. Then what did Ma'amar really
have? Although, you know what, in the end, when it comes to, the idea of another being the face, it's not like, it's, no one's, it's not being, she, some, is there somehow a consequence? If she, let's say she says her nether is to, I don't know, she's not going to eat olives. That's what we think about. So then you want to say that Levi goes and is mefer the nether. So then, so in principle, the nether is mefer. So what? So like what? She refuses to eat olives, she's over, she's ignoring the hafaran. What does it mean?
No, because because the question is, if she violates her nether, is she chay malchusana? Has she done an iser? If your wife makes a neder, and I'm mefer, and she violates the neder, she violated the neder, right? She's chay malchus because I have no rights over your wife's neder, right? But here, if Reuven dies. And Shimon does Ma'amar, and Chazal say, and therefore having done Ma'amar, he's the one that has rights. But if B'di'evit, against the rabbinic law, Levi still exercises the rights that the Torah gives him, but which Chazal limited.
But could Chazal have also, I mean, I guess we see they did it, but could they have instituted, and can they institute, not violently, but can they say, that we also require that if there's Ma'amar, that they would also have to have Hafara for on the one who did Ma'amar?
What do you mean Hafara on the one who did Ma'amar?
No, could they, you, we're not, you go back and forth, and they're right there, and they're right, but then Chazal were able to do a takana for Ma'amar. So could they also have a takana that would say that if another brother did it, that we'd still have a takana that the neder stands rabbinically until the one who did the Ma'amar.
They could. I don't think. That,
well, wait, it's
hypothetically, yes.
We don't have the halacha like the man.
Hypothetically,
that's not,
yeah.
That doesn't require you having to go with the idea of canceling out a deoraita. That just would be an additional takana.
Right. Look, we have this all the time. There are things that Chazal, there are rights that people have that Chazal say you can't do kiddushin with bia. What happens if you do kiddushin with bia? You're a rotten guy. In the times of Chazal, they'd whack you, they'd whip you. But she's mikudeshet, right? In other words, the Torah gives you that right. Chazal take that right away from you.
But
when Chazal take that right away from you, b'dieved, in almost every case, it's the word.
Rabbi Elazar is basically saying that all brothers have the right rights of being made for another. And Rabbi Akiva is saying that no brothers have any rights to be made for another. And Rami is basically saying that the only reason Rabbi Elazar says it is because we add to it this rabbinic tradition of Ma'amar, and therefore the brother did Ma'amar his rights. But in fact,
functionally, but it has to be. But the only way that I'm speculating here. I don't know, but I'm speculating that Rabbi Eliezer has to hold that all of them have rights, but Chazal fixed it that those rights are limited to one person because it's untenable to have multiple people holding the trigger, right?
Well, we don't really know.
We don't know. I'm speculating.
Would accept Ravami's
interpretation. Correct. I am speculating.
Well, everybody's speculating.
No. We're trying to find a way to speculate that would allow us to.
Rabbi Akiva's not speculating. Rabbi Akiva's telling you what the din is.
We're looking for speculation in our part of the
Rabbi Yoshua's not speculating. He's telling you what he thinks the din is. Rabbi Eliezer, it's unclear. Is Rabbi Eliezer the way that we imagined it when we first learned the Mishnah? Or is Rabbi Eliezer the way that Ami says Rabbi Eliezer says it is? Or is Rabbi Eliezer, or is Rav Ami telling you, this is my limitation on the way that Rabbi Eliezer would say? And we don't know. Is Rav Ami telling you what he thinks the din is?
He might even hold like Rabbi Akiva.
Rav Ami holds like Rabbi Akiva. Right? Rav Ami is a late Amora. Rabbi Akiva was Rabbi Akiva. Rav Ami knew the halacha as Rabbi Akiva. He's explaining to you the svara of what Rabbi, how could Rabbi, of the three shittas, Rabbi Eliezer is the most difficult to understand. So he's trying to explain to you, it must be that he thought it was like this according to this.
If we said that Ma'amar is just a rabbinic device anyway, because it was untenable, you just gave the example of Levi doing it anyway. He could do it anyway.
Yes, it would work.
It's all Ma'amar idea a little bit.
Well, no, only regards to
Okay.